interest for the entire community concerning people and events on the campus of Concordia Seminary. Your hostess is the seminary's Director of Publicity, Gladys Silflo.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gladys Silflo welcoming you to our regular monthly program, Monday Memos from Concordia Seminary. It's hard to believe that one whole month of the school year at the seminary has already passed. And, of course, it's hard to realize, too, all of the changes that have taken place here at the seminary. Before bringing you up to date on that, however, let me share with you a rundown of the various events scheduled to take place on our campus during the month of October. This Wednesday, that's the day after tomorrow, on October 7th, we will have the privilege of having as our convocation speaker the second vice president of the Synod, Dr. Joseph Lavallee of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Dr. Lavallee will speak about the challenges of ministry to the blacks and share with us some interesting sidelights of his own ministry, which covers a span of 44 years. We invite all of you in our radio audience to attend this convocation at 10 a.m. in Pritzlaff Hall. That's this Wednesday. Then, 2 weeks later, on October 21st, we look forward to welcoming back, also as convocation speaker, our now former president, seminary president, Dr. Ralph Bowman. He will address the students as the new synodical president, again at 10 a.m. in Pritzlaff, and guests and visitors are most welcome to attend. Then the following Wednesday, October 28, will be another historic day when Dr. Edward Frederick of Mequon, Wisconsin, will speak on our campus. I say historic because this is the first time in probably 25 years or more that we have the privilege of having a representative of the Wisconsin Synod speak on our campus. The topic for that convocation ties in with the observance of the Reformation and will center on the value for us today of the apology of the Augsburg Confession. Then, on the not-so-heavy side, on Friday, October 16th, the Seminary Guild will have its annual rally day on our campus, and we always look forward to that. The activities begin at 10 a.m. with registration and coffee in Lober Hall. This year, the Guild has a special treat in store for us. Several of the wives of faculty members will open their homes for a house tour, and this, I'm sure, will be most enjoyable. For those who prefer to do less walking, the film shown over NBC TV last fall under the title From Pew to Pulpit will be shown. You may remember that this program was filmed on our campus and tells the story of several students who decided in midlife to change careers and study for the ministry. Then getting back to Rally Day, there will be an opportunity to see some of the remodeled buildings on campus, such as Steckhardt Hall and Lober Hall. And then at lunchtime, the women will be guests of the seminary. The afternoon program will feature the seminary chorus under the direction of Dr. Alfred Fremder. There will be a message from the student body president and several other interesting speakers. Anyone is welcome, but we do ask that you make an advance reservation, either by calling the seminary or by calling the Guild's hospitality chairman, Ms. Holda Coward. Then, on October 15th, 16th, and 17th, the students are conducting a workshop on the cults. The first session is at 7 o'clock Thursday evening, October 15th. There is another evening session the following night on Friday, and it will continue all day Saturday. There will be presentations and discussions on such religions as Mormonism, the Hare Krishna, Jehovah's Witnesses, and others. All of the sessions are open to the public and, of course, at no charge. The two evening sessions will be held in Pritzlaff Hall and the Saturday sessions in Sieg Hall. Now, if any of you in our radio audience would like more information, you may call the seminary and ask for a brochure dealing with the seminar on the cults. But now, on with today's program. Our guest has been sitting through all of this very patiently, and it's time to give him a chance to speak now. It's a real privilege to welcome today Dr. John W. Klotz, Acting President of the Seminary. Welcome, Dr. Klotz.
It's good to be here.
I mentioned earlier in the program that many changes have taken place here on our campus, particularly within the last 2 months. Dr. Klotz, would you elaborate on that statement a little bit?
I suppose that the biggest change is the one you alluded to earlier, and that is the assumption by President Bowman of the presidency of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He was elected as the successor of Dr. Price in the July convention of the Synod and was installed into office last Sunday. That meant he had to leave the seminary and leave his position of leadership here at the seminary, a position which he really has held since 1974. At that time, he came in as the acting president, and then in 1975 was elected president of the seminary. The Board of Control had a farewell dinner for him, and then the faculty and staff also said their farewell. The students said their farewell, and they even went and hung a large banner on the Luther Tower, bidding him farewell and wishing him Godspeed. So he was installed into office last Sunday and is now down at 500 North Broadway. He's still living on campus. We're glad of that. We see him occasionally when he's not occupied at the office. We're happy that he'll be with us for at least some weeks now, and then he plans to move to his own home, which will be nearer to the synodical headquarters, the new synodical headquarters in Kirkwood. But that certainly is the biggest change that's taken place here at Concordia Seminary.
And related to that is the fact that I believe it was in the July Board of Control meeting that you were named acting president.
That's right, yes.
Mm-hmm. Many people are asking how soon a new president will be named. How do you answer that, Dr. Klotz?
That's a difficult question to answer because we don't know how long it will take to carry out the synodical mandate as it is outlined in the synodical handbook. The process is already underway. The Board of Control has issued the official call for nominations, and the nominations are beginning to come in.
How does that work? Is that similar to a congregation calling a pastor, or how do you nominate?
Well, there are some similarities, but there are a great many differences. The congregations of the Synod have a right to nominate candidates for the presidency, and it is the congregations which have the primary responsibility. In addition, our local Board of Control may nominate candidates, the faculty itself may nominate individuals, and the Board for Professional Education Services may nominate individuals. But the congregations are the primary source to which we turn for nominees for the presidency.
May each congregation nominate only one?
No, they may nominate more than one individual for the office. And these nominations are then gathered. There is a deadline. The deadline has been set as December 1st. Mm-hmm. And all nominations that are received by that time will be then considered. Mm-hmm. Now, in addition to the nominations coming in, there are two committees, really, that are set up to assist in screening the nominations. There is a joint faculty Board of Control committee, which has the responsibility of studying the needs of the seminary and then providing an initial evaluation of the individuals who have been nominated. Then there is a faculty committee which has the responsibility for making recommendations to the electors, suggesting to the electors who they feel will be the individual or individuals best suited to assume the presidency.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I'm curious about, when a nomination is received, does the committee have to gather additional information on this person, or are questionnaires sent out, or what's done with them?
Probably the committee will follow that pattern. The nominations actually come to the secretary of the Board of Regents, and he is responsible for gathering the nominations and also for gathering information on these individuals, both information that comes in voluntarily and also information that's solicited. Mm-hmm. And I rather imagine that the committee will develop a form seeking information on the nominees.
I see. Uh-huh. Is that list eventually published, all those who are nominated?
Yes, the list will eventually be published in the official publications. It must be published there, and then at least 6 weeks must elapse before the actual election can take place. So you see that with a deadline of December 1st, the earliest possible date for an election is mid-January. Now, from a practical standpoint, it may not be possible to arrange for the election that early. So it's quite possible that the election will be postponed until February. Then the individual must consider the call which he has and must determine whether the Lord is really calling him to serve as president, so that it may take some time before a new president is not only named but has accepted the call to the presidency.
Mm-hmm. Could we backtrack just a little? After the list of nominees appears, supposing a person has something negative to say about an individual, does he have an opportunity somehow to voice that, or
yes.
How is that done?
Yes, both negative and positive judgments are in order, and these are transmitted to the Board of Regents, to the committees, and finally to the electors. Now, there is a handbook provision that the individual has a right to respond to any negative comments that are made. In all fairness to him, he has a right to answer any criticisms that are made, and his answers then are available ultimately to the electors.
Mm-hmm. Is all of this information, I'm assuming, is confidential, or... No.
Yes, the information is basically confidential, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, of course, it must be shared with the faculty committee, the faculty board committee, too, and then also with the electors.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've used two terms here that I wish you would explain, clarify. One is Board of Regents, and the other is electors.
The Board of Regents is the new name for our Board of Control. In the July convention, new handbook regulations were adopted, and among other things, what was called a Board of Control is now called a Board of Regents. Mm-hmm. Now, I also spoke of the electors. These are the individuals who actually have the responsibility for choosing the new president. There are four votes. One vote is held by the president of the Senate, in this case by President Bowman. Then a second vote is held by the chairman of the Board for Professional Education Services, or his representative. A third vote is held by the president of the Missouri District, Dr. Spitz. And a fourth vote is held by the Board of Regents, voting collectively, without the district president, who is nominally a member of the Board of Regents, but since he is functioning as one of the electors, he does not participate in casting their vote.
Mm-hmm.
So there are four votes, and 3 votes are needed to elect the individual as president. Mm-hmm.
If I understand that correctly, of the 4 votes, 2 are by individuals and 2 from boards. Is that correct? Is the board, now I refer to it as board for higher education.
That's the old name. Okay. We have a new name there too.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that a vote of the board or of the...
It is, the responsibility is given to the chairman of the Board for Professional Education Services. Now, I know that he will surely consult with his board and secure their judgments, but the responsibility for casting the vote is his.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what happens if you cannot get 3 votes?
Then the Board of Regents may issue a call for additional candidates, or another election may be scheduled using the candidates who are there. Perhaps they would, in that case, ask for additional information. Mm-hmm. But they may also ask for additional candidates. They may say that they will require an entirely new list, or they may say that they'll request additional candidates.
I see. Is the date of that election publicized in advance?
Yes, and it may not be less than 6 weeks after the list appears in the official periodicals.
What is the reason for that? To give people an opportunity to respond?
Yes, this is to give people an opportunity to express themselves.
Yes. I see.
So that it's a very democratic process. The purpose, of course, is to secure the man who is best qualified for the office, and ultimately the man whom the Lord himself wants in this position.
Well, you've certainly done a fine job of explaining to us exactly what the procedure is, and we're grateful to you for that. I said earlier that we've experienced a lot of changes on our campus. What about the enrollment this year? Where do we stand on that?
Well, we're very happy to report that our enrollment has increased. The last report we had was that we have 761 students, and this is reasonably accurate. There is always the possibility of a change of 1 or 2 because we haven't reached the official enrollment date. But at the present time, the enrollment stands at 761. Now, last year, our enrollment was 724. So, at the present time, we have an increase of 37 students in this last year, and we're very happy with that. We had expected that our enrollment would level off at about 725 or 750. As you can see, we've exceeded that figure, and I suppose once more that it's an instance of our not expecting the blessings that we've received from God. Mm-hmm. That's been the history of these last few years.
That's
we
true.
Always planned for fewer students and anticipated fewer students than we actually had.
Yeah. I think many people are under the impression that this is the highest figure that we've ever had, but that's not really true. However, I'm curious to know how this figure of 761 compares with the enrollment before 1974 or before the walkout.
It's higher than that. As you pointed out, it is not the highest in the seminary's history. One of the reasons for that is that at one time we had 4 classes on campus in addition to the class which was out on vicarage. Now, for the past few years, we've had 3 classes plus a class of vicars. But in 1973-74, the year of the walkout, the year opened with a total of 749 students. So this year we are above the figure of the number of students that were present at the time of the walkout.
Mm-hmm. Well, with this continuing increase, are we keeping pace with added faculty members?
I would say we are adding faculty members, but I don't think that we are really keeping pace with our needs. What we are trying to do is to choose men who will be qualified instructors. We would like, of course, to have an adequate faculty numerically to take care of the number of students, but more important than this is to have the right sort of men who will be training future pastors. men who themselves have had pastoral experience, who have shown themselves to be good pastors, and who also have the academic qualifications, an advanced academic degree, preferably an earned doctorate. Mm-hmm. So we've added 7 new faculty and staff members this year. We would like to have added more, but we are grateful to the Lord that we've been able to add this number.
Mm-hmm. Who are the 7? Would you run that by us?
We have 5 men who will actually be teaching. Dr. Jonathan Grothy will be teaching in the New Testament. Pastor Charles Knipple has joined us in the Department of Practical Theology. Robert Rosine has joined us as an instructor in historical theology. Dr. David Schmiel has joined our faculty as the Dean of Instruction and also as Professor of Historical Theology. And Professor Paul Schreiber has joined us in the Old Testament department. Mm-hmm. Then we have 2 new staff members, Jim Rice, who will be working in the seminary relations area, and Rick Hendricks, who will be working in campus services area as the assistant business manager.
Okay. So how many members of the teaching faculty are there this school year then?
If we count the number of men who are teaching, and this does not include men who are not in the classroom but who are nevertheless considered faculty members, but we have 29 teaching faculty members. Now, in addition, 3 of the men who normally teach are on sabbatical. So in one sense, we would say that we have 32 teaching faculty members. And then, in addition to that, we have a number of guest professors and guest instructors, guest lecturers, who have been able to help us out. And we certainly are grateful for their services.
Mm-hmm. I don't mean to put you on the spot, Dr. Klotz, but how does this number, 29 or 32, whichever way you look at it, compare with the pre-walkout statistics? How many did we have then?
At the time of the walkout, we had listed 44 teaching faculty members, so that we had a larger number of faculty members at that time than we have at present.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you've given us a good picture of what it looks like here on the campus. Are there any other significant changes on campus or campus life that you might want to mention?
Well, we're very happy that we've received a gift of a 40-apartment unit complex in St. Anne. It's a gift, and this will help us a great deal in meeting the needs of our married students. At the present time, 60% of our students are married, and so the addition of this apartment complex will help us a great deal. Housing in Clayton is quite expensive, and it's very helpful to the student to be able to rent his housing from the seminary. We're able, in effect, to subsidize him and assist him in that way. So we're very happy with this addition to the number of apartments which we own. At the present time, we have 110 apartments for our married students, and we certainly are grateful for the fact that we're able to provide them housing in this way. Many of the apartments are in the immediate vicinity, and that makes it nice for our students.
That sounds wonderful, that total of 110, but when you consider that 60% need to look for housing, that still leaves an awful lot who are on their own.
Yeah, many are on their own and have to sort of scrounge around for their own housing.
What about Lober Hall? We've been hearing a lot about the remodeling of Lober Hall. What is in the plans there?
This has been renovated into a student center. We're very happy with what we have there. It's a very fine complex and something that I think we're going to be very proud of. We're anxious to see the completion of that project. We're very close to completion, and I know that it's going to serve our students very well.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Klotz, I see that our time is up. We're very grateful to you for taking the time to be with us today, particularly in view of your extremely busy schedule. Not only are you serving as acting president, you're also teaching two courses, and I know that every minute counts.
Happy to join you.
Well, we wish you the Lord's rich blessings and pray that he will give you continued strength and enthusiasm to carry on.
Thank you.
Listening to Monday Memo from Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, with hostess Gladys Sulflo. This program is brought to you the first Monday of every month at 12:05.